Postcards from Beyond, written and narrated by Paul Harris. Knowledge. The root cause of all psychological distress is awija, ignorance, the willful avoidance of reality. Ignorance is perpetuated in order to maintain the assumption of our own separateness, the belief in what some people call the soul or ego. One of the ways we try to avoid existential uncertainty and prop up our view of self is through the accumulation of knowledge. Knowledge is power, and power affords us a measure of control in an otherwise unpredictable world. For those engaged in the pursuit of the higher knowledge of enlightenment, this fundamental aspect of our nature needs to be fully comprehended. We risk otherwise falling into spiritual conceit. To explain, here is a personal example. During my travels in India during the mid-1990s, I read books by the Indian teacher Jiddu Krishnamurti. To this day, I hold his words in the greatest esteem, and what he wrote has undoubtedly had a major impact on my life. At the time, I was also writing my own journal, which I kept as part of my desperate efforts to make sense of the world. One day, however, I threw every last one of those copious volumes of frantic scribbling in the bin. Why? It was because I had a moment of stark realization that I was a fraud. Looking at my journal entries, I saw that all they consisted of was a sterile rehashing of Krishnamurti's words. I realized that I did not know whether what I had written was actually true or not, because it did not come from my own experience. It was all mimicry, second-hand knowledge at best, and therefore it could not in and of itself set me free. In hindsight, I am glad that I went through that whole period. On the one hand, what was essentially memorizing the words of someone I considered to be enlightened did subsequently come in very useful once I had discovered mindfulness and wise reflection. On the other hand, I also learned a very valuable lesson, that intellectual appreciation of a subject is not at all the same thing as direct understanding. Perhaps if someone repeats publicly what he or she has read and thought about, that person may fool some of the people some of the time into believing that they are wise. Why, however, would anyone want to do that? The answer is, of course, conceit. It's to bolster the ego, the sense of I am. It's using the spiritual life not to transcend the view of self, but as yet another way of trying to impose and reinforce the ego as an absolute reality. I'm not the only one to have gone through this kind of process. In his book, Life as a Siamese Monk, the Venerable Kapalawado Bhikkhu, who was my teacher's teacher, tells a similar story. For him, the same recognition came during a lecture he gave on Buddhism as a layman and directly led him to ordain in Thailand as a Theravadan Buddhist monk. To spout religious or spiritual ideas and doctrines to others without the real experience of them is high-minded ignorance. Just because you read about it in a book and thought about it does not mean for one moment that you have actually realized it. Intellectual appreciation is not at all the same as wisdom. This is also true when it comes to reading about other ways people see the world, such as the theories developed by quantum physicists. a perennial favourite amongst meditators. It's well known that descriptions of the behaviour of subatomic particles bear an uncanny resemblance to the ancient mystical teachings found in Hinduism, Buddhism, and Taoism. For Indra's net, read Zero Point Field. Many fascinating books have been written about the parallels between them, and it's undoubtedly a tantalizing subject. But ultimately, how helpful is it? Science is one discipline. The spiritual path is something quite different. Although both are intent on understanding life, they are not at all the same thing, as they employ radically different methodologies. Exploring similarities between the quantum world and mystical descriptions of enlightenment might be extremely edifying and may well expand your intellectual knowledge base, but it will not increase your wisdom one jot. Science is about accumulating knowledge and power by looking at the objective world. Meditation, on the other hand, is about eradicating the ignorance that causes suffering by looking directly at your subjective experience. Science seeks to prove what has been assumed in the first place. Conversely, meditators are practicing to free themselves from all assumptions. Given these fundamental differences, if you commandeer scientific findings in an attempt to authenticate your spiritual beliefs in the eyes of the secular world, but without properly understanding them, beware. The proper yardstick for assessing claims in the scientific community is to provide verifiable, objective evidence for your claims. If you cannot, then you are guilty of what I call high-minded ignorance, and scientists know it. They call it spiritual woo-woo. Not even an enlightened being can prove objectively that there is a beyond of the world as normally understood. But then he or she does not have to prove it. As meditators, we are under absolutely no obligation to conform to the diktats of the scientific world. They are different spheres of knowledge. Proof, for the meditator, is the direct, intuitive experience of reality, insight wisdom, that leads to the reduction and elimination of suffering. It is transformative in a way that science can never be. As one physicist put it, "In principle, I know that I am made of stardust, but in all honesty, it doesn't feel like it." If scientists want to experience the reality behind what the Buddha taught, then they would need to be willing to set aside their assumptions and accumulated knowledge. They would need to accept spiritual instruction, learn how to meditate, investigate their own subjective experience, and see whether suffering is reduced as a consequence. For this is the appropriate yardstick in this discipline. Reading about enlightenment and how to go about realizing it is a crucial supporting condition for a meditator. The mere accumulation of knowledge, however, collecting more and better descriptions, making comparisons, and drawing conclusions will not produce enlightenment. Imagine that you have friends who go to Tenerife on holiday, and whilst there, they send you a postcard. There's a beautiful photograph on the front, and on the back it's written, "Having a lovely time, wish you were here." From that, you think, this must be what Tenerife is like. If the next year they go back and they send you another postcard, is this taking you closer to Tenerife? No, not one jot. It might give you more of an inkling as to what Tenerife might be like, but in no way is it the same as being there. When it comes to postcards from beyond, no matter how many you are sent, no matter how eloquent the descriptions, they can never take you there. Their role is to educate, elucidate, and inspire, but that is their limit, and the practicing meditator must always bear this in mind. The accumulation of knowledge is born of the desire to avoid the suffering inherent in reality. And for a meditator to seek either salvation or personal status simply through becoming knowledgeable is an anathema to the spiritual life. Anyone can read a book. For the intellectually minded, this makes meditation very difficult. Often, their academic appreciation of the Buddha's teaching races far ahead of their meditative skills, and this can cause a great deal of confusion, misapplication, and distrust of real practice. It's like reading a car manual from cover to cover, over and over, until you feel that you have completely understood how a car works. The moment, however, you put your head under a bonnet for real, you experience the petrol fumes and the greasy muck inside, which you were never prepared for by your pristine intellectual model. Disgusted, you recoil. It's the same with meditation. The intellectual discovers the reality of his or her mind is a lot hotter, dirtier, and far more unpredictable than their accumulated knowledge of the teaching had led them to believe. In fear, they recoil back to the apparent safety of their accumulated knowledge. Wisdom and intellect are not the same thing. For wisdom to flower, intellect must be put to one side. True meditation involves learning to put aside thinking, because thinking is the outcome of all our accumulated knowledge and experience. Thinking reinforces the impression that life is predictable, manageable, and under your control, and therefore perpetuates illusion. Only in the absence of thought can an unpremeditated insight into life arise. For insight wisdom to emerge, you must first comprehend how thinking is bound up with the willful desire to avoid looking directly at reality. Consistently restraining from indulging thoughts further after they have arisen eventually brings mental clarity and a sense of spaciousness. It's then possible to be mindful of and investigate each new moment without any assumption or expectation about what will happen. Resting content in the moment, watching things arise and pass away, it's then possible to comprehend life in ways never known before.